Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Stop Child Abuse Now, SCAN, radio program 2992. Stop Child Abuse Now is a production of NASCA, and NASCA is the National Association of Adults Survivors of Child Abuse. And I am going to read the NASCA mission statement so everybody knows who we are and where we're coming from. Okay, here we are. We have a single purpose at NASCA: to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so with only two goals. One, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, CSA. Presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. Two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. And I read that mission statement from the NASCA website, and that website is naasca.org, NASCA.org, and it is full of resources and phone numbers and wonderful things to help people. Tonight's show is a survivor professional show, which means that our special guest host is a survivor of child abuse, as am I. And she is also a professional. And in her case, this is Pastor Deborah Schleich, and she is here tonight with us. I'm going to tell you a little bit about the pastor. She grew up all over the world in a military family where her mother was mentally ill. She's now a survivor professional living in Pensacola, Florida. She's trained in ministry, mental health, working with substance abuse, and is a trauma-informed social worker, all in one. She volunteers with many community organizations. Pastor Deborah says she can minister by text, phone, Skype, in person, and however the Lord directs her, 24/7. She teaches that humans have three parts, being of spirit, soul, and the physical body, and believes that all three are important and that each area needs care. We look forward to Pastor Deborah being an active member of the NASCA family for a long time. Okay, so I would like to introduce our special guest, Pastor Deborah. Good evening.
Good evening, and
Hello.
Hello. Hello, Pastor. This is also Penelope. I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm the co-host this evening with Annie, and I just wanted to mention that my job is to greet any panel members that wish to call in on the back line, and I will then just introduce myself and see who you are and welcome you into the show. So if you'd like to be involved in the show tonight, the number to call in is area code 646-595-2118. Again, that's area code 646-595-2118, and I'll greet you on our back line, and you can be involved in the show. So sorry to interject, but thank you, and thank you, Annie, for hosting, and Pastor Deborah, and I will mute myself now.
Thank you, Penelope. Wonderful. Okay, so do please call in and join our conversation tonight. And Pastor Deborah, hi again.
Hello.
We were talking before the show on making sure that our show gives hope to the listener and gives them something that can help them in their lives and maybe even turn their lives around. And I was mm-hmm. thinking of that and how powerful communication can be.
Mm-hmm. That's one thing that a lot of abuse victims, in the process of telling their story, don't really get a lot of training in. They don't have a lot of, we'll say, good communication skills on the telephone, how to do it in front of a camera at home, or even up in front of people, you know, that kind of thing. And that's one thing they really, if they're going to sort of be an advocate or get up and tell their story, you know, a lot of times you only have a few minutes to tell it because, you know, they have other business. And then there's a lot of times in there's question and answer time. So you can't spend forever on your story. You have to, you know, have it well organized. And so communication skills, when you are at that point in your healing that you can talk. But if you're not at that point in your healing yet, then you need to stay in healing and, you know, maybe be in some group therapy where you get up in front of people, you know. A person who's been abused as a child usually are not always, but they're very shy in their talking. Oh, they can talk about anything, football, but to get into some intimate details about their family or what happened to them, to tell other people about, hey, I'm not a child anymore, but there are children being abused like I was. They don't have a lot of classes. There's not a lot of public speaking coaches that can help somebody like that. So you have to kind of get some help to be a public speaker and to do it right. So, you know, you don't kind of, you know, laugh a lot when you shouldn't be or go on into a lot of detail, depending on the audience that you're with. And you should always be able to end your talk that there's hope, that I tell you this story about me, so you sitting out there who may have had the same thing. I always just looked at everybody in the audience, doesn't matter, church, pastors, community groups, I knew every one of them had had some issues as children, probably disassociate. And a lot of times your caseworkers, your social workers, they've had this stuff. Once you learn about acute childhood trauma experiences, you learn that a lot of people go into the helping profession because they're trying to help themselves by helping other people. And so you have to know your audience, know that there's people out there sort of silently suffering, and they're looking for hope. are looking for one word, one little reach with your words, your voice. You have to learn to be able to express hope and healing in your voice. You must be knowledgeable. You must be able to look at an audience, and the statistics are that 1 in 5 people, or 1 in 4, have had a mental health issue or are currently having a mental health issue. You have to know about grief. You have to know about family dynamics. You have to know about the effects of alcohol in a family, okay? Even if you didn't have it, to get up and talk to an audience, whether it's on the phone like this or on a YouTube or in a, you know, public meeting. But at the end of that, if all you've done is told your sob story, poor woe is me, because you want all the people to feel sorry for you and to come up to you afterwards and pat you on the back and say, oh, I'm so sorry that happened, I'm so... then you have made your talk all about yourself. You've not offered any hope and healing to those in the audience. Remember, 1 out of every 4 people got mental health issues. Probably just about everybody had a traumatic childhood experience in some way. Of course, they're not going to talk about it. And so what happened is they don't get any hope. All they do is you're just talking about, you're just interested in you. You just want us to pat you on the back, and you want us to hug you and love you, but you're not helping us. If I had to learn that, I had to learn how to look at an audience or a speaking, you know, on the phone or whatever, and go, I'll bet you there's people out there that everybody's got issues. We all, if you had a pet die when you were a child, dog got run over, I boiled my goldfish. Traumatic for a child. If you had sickness or you lose a brother or sister or family issues, you got some issues and you may not have resolved them. So here they are now, they're grown adults, and maybe they've sought no therapy. There they are out there in your audience listening on the phone, listening to scanned radio. Now what? What does your voice say to them? Do they hear hope? Can they say, yeah, I listened to her or him. They know that their life sounded just like mine. And they said something happened. Maybe it was, you hear it a lot, a football coach came along, changed my life, got me on the right path, maybe a pastor. Maybe I got a girlfriend and they just loved me no matter what. Maybe it was a friend. Maybe I ended up in jail and there was a guard or a counselor in there and they told me there was hope. And so when you're an advocate for something and you've been through stuff in your life, when we all have, we need to be able to recognize people listening. They might still be in it, or they might be adults, and they have not had healing yet. And they need to hear your voice. Give them hope. Give them encouragement. Somehow, whatever you say can bring peace or healing. I think you had mentioned, Annie, that sometimes somebody hears a song, and it just touches them.
Yes.
And they cry, and they're getting healing. They don't know why, you know, but they start crying. Or if they hear a story about somebody getting healed, and all of a sudden they go to themselves, maybe I can be healed. Okay? And so we don't, like I said, a lot of advocates of everything, they're not taught how to do that to your audiences. Even if you're in politics, leadership, there's people that got issues. And their families are going through things. And and what, how do you help them through your voice? That's all they've got right here with us on the Blog Talk Radio. It's our voice. Whether we, you know, giggle and laugh about things that might be important to us or in our lives, but means nothing to the listeners. Doesn't do a thing to give them hope. Help them through a day that's been depressing. You know, something like that. So I have had to learn how to, every video, everything that, you know, I can tell some sad stories, okay, because we've all got them. But that didn't help anybody too much. You know, that doesn't help them, say, seek out a therapist or to seek, you know, maybe even go on the NASCA group Zoom thing that they have. And or seek a pastor out, or, you know, sometimes people get lots of healing just listening to music, to certain music or tones. And some people just, I need to go for a walk. I need to go and just sit and be quiet and think about things that I just heard, okay, from that person who I don't know who they are. And we've all had teachers in our lives, coaches, friends, family members. Maybe they quoted some poem to us. Maybe there was a certain song being played, you know, and all of a sudden something clicks in us and those dark clouds, you know, just break up and they have some hope. So I'll be quiet now so you guys can ask questions or if there's a caller or something.
Well, thank you, Pastor Deborah. Thank you. I have a couple of comments, so many ideas based on what you said. I want to say first that there's hope. There is hope. And I can say that because I came from a place of curled up in a ball in the closet, unable to interact with human beings, to a place where I am now, where I can speak to people on the radio, in podcasts, in person. I'm not afraid anymore. And it took years of talking to and listening to other survivors of child abuse to get me to this place. But there is hope. I got here. I never would have thought it. Never would have thought it was possible. But it is possible.
Now, a lot of times, you know, when people are not yet healed, sometimes they just need to have some hope for the next 10 minutes, the next hour. Okay? And if they got through that, because maybe they're under some kind of emotional attack and, you know, they're having deep breathing problems or something, or they just heard some bad news today and all their emotions flood in, you know, and sometimes, you know, the hope is just for then. And then other times, because, you know, a lot of survivors don't think long-term. They just think now. Get through the day. Get through the minute. And so they don't see and they don't really feel like there's ever been anybody with them. But there really has been in the realm of the spirit. They just don't know it. And so hope is one of those things that I would say community organizations are, and churches and the government, they're trying to give. They're trying to offer, you know, medical care, therapy, food, shelter to some. And for some it's probably working, but, you know, you can be a multimillionaire, have a fantastic home and a job, and have issues. and you can't talk about it. You know, you compartmentalize everything, and you make good money, but emotionally you're a wreck. You've been married 3 and 4 times. You know, you're abusive at home, but at work you're not like that. And so, you know, I've had to learn to look at every, and they all, you know, they go along, you know, very well until something happens and they just don't know how to deal with it. And you throw in child abuse on top of that, childhood trauma, you know, and if there was any kind of physical beatings, there could have been some brain damage. And, you know, it's a world of secrecy, shame and guilt and feeling betrayed. Now, they don't know a lot of times those terms. But when I speak, or when somebody is teaching or is sort of your guest, they must know that listeners, you know, I always know God will always bring, hey, you bring whoever you need to hear it, who needs to listen. So I'm always aware of that somebody needs some hope. And to keep my voice calm, very sort of, not loud, not giggly, not laughing, not telling jokes, but very serious, because some people listening, they might be sitting there with a gun in their hand. And they just happen to listen. And you've seen some movies about that. And without me knowing it, I might say something and it clicks with them. And they want to listen the more. Maybe my voice is sweet or something. And maybe there's some kind of fairy dust on it or something. And they put the gun down to listen. And being a pastor, then I always know how to help them from that point, which is lead them in a prayer to get saved, let God do some deliverance, adopt them as a spiritual mother, and say, sweetie, you're not alone anymore. You have been found. Okay, we know you're a mess. You've had a mess. You've been in a mess. Don't need to tell me anything about it. Whatever I need to know, God will tell me. But you've been found in that darkness and that silence. Yep, you've been found. We've come. Here's the free gift of agape love. Start there. And I had to work with a lot of very religious groups that would dress up as Jesus, make fun of them, abuse them, so they would not go that way when they get grown up, and they would think, you know, that Jesus was very abusive and that his word was not good. But I always had to know people were listening. And even, you know, like after we do the radio show, so who knows, maybe 2 months from now, somebody will find it, listen to it. So you have to make, every time you come on Blog Talk Radio, you do a video, you give hope, you speak to the issues calmly and quietly, sort of. So people, when I do my videos, I'm sitting at home physically, but I visualize I'm talking to billions of people, even off-planet people, and that they're listening. Maybe they're sleeping or they're in a dream, and they're hearing somebody loves you. It's going to be okay. You're not alone anymore. We found you. We got your hand. We got your back. Maybe that's all they hear. And they go, I'm not alone anymore. Somebody loves me. And then they'll, you know, check you out through your voice. Because, you know, a lot of people have told them that they, I love you, honey. You're my special one. And so love sometimes is twisted and perverted. Help can be twisted and perverted. Healing can be twisted and perverted. And there's a lot of strange ones out there that are offering healing, you know, and you got to pay a lot of money for it, or, you know, some sexual favors, and, you know, I got something you want, healing or some affection. There's some strange therapists out there. So I have to know that too, that I have to be aware of my voice. I have to be aware of the tone. I have to be aware that people might listen, and all they're going to hear is my voice. So my voice has to have a certain tone to it. My stories, whatever I talk, they have to be able to go, I want to hear more talking about. And sometimes, like I said, a lot of people who have been healed and are older people, they have not yet learned how to have that kind of voice and how to speak as a advocate. Because, you know, you could be an advocate to the policeman, advocates to church leaders, advocate to women's groups, advocates, you know, to other people that work, let's say, in social work. But a lot of advocates don't talk directly to a survivor. They might, but there should be, you know, when you talk, you should always go, somebody's listening. And am I talking professionally? Am I just giggling? Or what am I presenting, you know, on the phone here for NASCA? NASCA is a wonderful organization. And so I am aware that I represent it. I represent its goals. I represent what it was set out to do. And so I try to make sure that I know people are wanting and drawn to NASCA based on what I say and my voice, my tone of my voice, the topics I talk about. So I will be quiet, Miss Annie, so you can ask any questions.
Okay, well, I'd like to invite Penelope in to see if she's available and has any questions or comments. Are you there, Penelope?
I am. Thank you, Annie, and thank you, Pastor Deborah. You know, as you're talking about the advocacy piece and just the gift of contribution. And to think about when we do these shows and they're recorded, and they are listened to over time, and we can actually track that, and we see the numbers of episodes. Yeah, we see more and more listening. So it is true. We are planting these seeds, and so I do, for me, one thing that I really helped me, and it wasn't just one song or one thing, but just the general realization that this healing from child abuse and sexual child abuse is a process. And, you know, you mentioned looking, you know, far into the future and then, you know, day by day. And for me, the one thing that really did help is the whole concept of recovery, and that I understand that not every 2 days are the same, that you know, some days might more difficult, but there is hope because there's so many amazing days. And just because I have a bad day, I have a trigger where I don't know where it's coming from, doesn't mean it's part of the recovery. It's part of the process, and it doesn't mean that I'm not healing. Doesn't mean that I'm not moving forward. It's just, so for me, it was the concept of recovery.
Just well, what happens, you can relate that to, let's say, if you discovered you have cancer. Okay, you're now a mid-adult, and all of a sudden, boom. Now, the doctors are saying we can do radiation, chemo, if we have to do a double mastectomy or other things, we should be able to lick it. They have hope. And most of those cancer doctors, that's why a lot of people go to certain places, because they have to have hope But they say it's a long process. You know, in treating it, you're going to lose your hair. It ain't going to be fun. You might get sick. But people are willing to go through that because they want to live. And the doctors and the nurses know that the family and the person may not have much hope. And so they rely on the smiles of the doctor, the kindness, the knowledge, the strength, the quiet compassion of the doctor and the nurses. And because not only is the treatment required, and like you said, healing's a process. It's a process to be healed from cancer. And your whole life changes and flashes before you. So a lot of your, and it's different with, we'll say, cancer. Your cancer doctors, well, they're with you for years. But not a, you know, not a therapist, you know. And you don't quite, sometimes you don't get along with the personality of the therapist. And as you said, Penelope, you have your good days and your bad days, you know. And a lot of times people don't talk about emotional healing from abuse, the stages of it. They don't talk about what you might need to go through, what you may have to find some forgiveness for, or how do you forget the memories? You know, what is healing? What does it mean to be healed and not get triggered? And a lot of times, a therapist from the mental health world, they just kind of deal with what you want to talk about at that moment and try to help you kind of figure it out in 50 minutes. And I'll see you next week or in a couple weeks. Pastors really don't have the training in it. A lot of women's ministries don't. AA is, I know Bill's story is he got in an AA group because he had drug and alcohol problems. And what you're given is a buddy. He's going to hold you accountable for showing up at the AA meetings. And then a lot of times in therapy, the client doesn't have a mentor. You can't call your therapist. And here's what's interesting. I just saw a TV ad. And I guess some guys, it was something about getting a therapist. I can't remember what it was called, or a coach. And they show this young guy showing up at his therapist's house and getting a hug from her. And you go, that boy needs his mama, and that's what he's getting. He's getting a mama, but it's a therapist, and it's some kind of new program where, you know, you can go over to the therapist's house, you know, that kind of thing. So it's very interesting, you know, once you realize that you've been sexually abused as a child. Some people don't know why they're like the way they are, or why they're in gangs, or why they're angry, or why they turn to drugs and alcohol. They don't know. And they have no clue. No revelations have come yet. And, you know, it's buried deep. And I, as a therapist, you knew everybody that made an appointment with you, they had issues, okay? And so I went from that, and I worked in a rehab hospital with people with physical disability. Everybody that showed up in the hospital had physical disabilities of some kind, and they all were going through emotional traumas at the same time. So I just got used to knowing, hey, everybody's got issues. So I had to learn to be careful in my language, you know, what I watched on television. You know, I don't tell jokes. I don't laugh about it. Don't giggle, you know. I'm quiet. I don't tell personal stories unless it can relate to healing. But people don't, a lot of times they don't want to hear all your stuff. They want to, well, could you speak to me? You know, could you speak something that will resonate with me. You know, do you know that I'm out here? Can your words or whatever you're talking about, or will it help me? And I had to learn to be careful and make every word count. And I had to learn how to lower the volume of my voice and not waste a phone call, not waste a text, not waste a letter, not waste a video, because you never know who's listening. And so it's real important that, you know, I hope more people who are like you ladies are, have come a long way and are now advocates and speaking, will get training. Maybe NASCA can do some good training to teach people how to be public speakers or advocate speakers, or how to use their voice properly, and, you know, how to talk so somebody goes, wow. I don't know what it is about that person. I want to hear more. They've got such hope in their voice. And I'm going to keep listening. You know, something like that. And a lot of survivors, they're very focused on themselves, but not on other people. And so they kind of get deep in their mucky stuff and thinking that's going to help other people, but it really doesn't. Because other people say, well, I'm in my own muck over here. How's your muck going to help me? But tell me how to be healed. Tell me the path to go. Tell me where to go. Who's out there that will love me? You know, something like that. So it takes a lot of training. I've watched a lot of videos on how to just talk on a camera, you know, and how to write public speaking and how to do keynote speaking. And I did a lot of community, you know, go put up a tent and talk with the public, and how to pray openly with people, and, you know, how to be gentle and quiet. A lot of people in the faith-based community, they're very loud. When they pray for people, their gestures, when they're up in the pulpit, when they sing. And if you've been abused, you ain't going anywhere near that. Okay, it's too loud. You just kind of sit there and you nothing. You put up your walls of defense, you know. And it takes love and kindness, asking nothing, and to bring down the walls of a defense, let their guard down, so to speak, so your words can come in and give them hope. I had to learn how to do that. So I'll be quiet now again.
Thank you, Pastor Deborah. And I just want to say that your tips on advocacy are so wise. I'm thinking maybe you could offer training in advocacy for NASCA. Just a thought.
Maybe. And a lot of it's done, you know, like I said, I watch a lot of videos, okay? And even the music you use, some people, they're great, have a great topic. I can't hear them because the music they're playing is too loud. Or their voice is too, especially with men, they seem to be louder. And everybody, you know, a lot of times I listen to you guys. I can get it on my computer. Sometimes I just turn it off because it's nothing but laughing. Has nothing to do with healing. Sometimes the men are too loud and they feel too pressed. They want to tell their whole story, but you only got an hour and a half. But if you're not, haven't had that kind of trauma, then no, okay. And so I had to learn, it doesn't matter what kind of trauma you had. It doesn't matter if you're a male or a female. Speak English or don't speak English. The soul and the spirit react the same. It's lonely. It feels no love. It's all been shamed, rejected, abandoned, abused. Everybody's had out-of-body experiences, near death, They live in fear. They hide. It's like a little person behind a curtain that's afraid to come out. And I had to learn that. And I'm just saying advocates, they need to have a course about speaking in public, on the radio, on videos, in support groups. A lot of people love, you know, those support groups. They can be, you can go and, well, let's hear what Susan has to say. And Susan starts talking about her abuse. She will trigger everybody there by her story. And everybody gets triggered. And now is emotionally upset. Nobody can heal because of her story. You don't have to tell the gritty, nitty stuff to other survivors. They need to hear, I had a bad life. I was abused. I'm not going to tell you all the details because you guys have probably been there. But what I want to tell you is how I found healing and the journey I went on and how I had to do it day by day. See, that's what's not in a lot. I sat in a lot of support groups, and everybody wants to tell their story. Well, because I hadn't been able to talk about it. But your story could hurt somebody else and trigger them and cause them emotional devastation by listening to your abusive story. So you have to be, not sit there and the group therapist or the leader, well, let's hear what so-and-so has to say. And they get all angry because they got triggered. And then they get angry at the one that spoke. That's not healing. Because everybody's angry at somebody. So as an advocate, you have to learn what to say. You got a bunch of little kids that want a mommy. They want to be loved. They want to be accepted just the way they are. You know, and I always tell them, you don't have to tell me anything. I already know everything about you. I know exactly what happened. I know exactly what it felt like. Been there, done that. And what I don't know, God will tell me. You don't have to tell me. And I would do that with some of the most severest people that's ever been abused. And what they would do is some of them would want to write about their life, so they would write me letters about it. Okay? And I would, and when they called me, I said, that's okay. I still love you. You're worthy of the love of God. You are beautiful. You may not know it. You may feel dirty. I had to learn how to work with multiple personalities in my home. I had this one young girl, name was Amanda, sweet girl. I brought her into my home to help her. She was homeless. She ends up under a bed. A part had come up. She didn't have any clothes on. Now, she had clothes on, but the part that came up, I didn't believe she did because she felt she was naked. I said, would you like some clothes? Because you could see she was shivering. She says, and I knew what it was, so I had to verbally say, it's okay, sweetie. You let me get you some clothes. And I'd reach my hand with nothing in it, say, here's a jacket, here's some pants. Get dressed, and you come out when you feel safe. I had to deal with that, okay? Because boom, it happened. And sometimes it's the seasons of the year. Sometimes it's perfume, cologne, boom, they're triggered. And I had to learn and study that to help bring them sort of back and, you know, that kind of thing. So and that wasn't taught in your mental health counseling classes. It wasn't taught. There was no questions about that on the state licensing. Master's level people really don't deal with that level of abuse. Some psychologists do. They do a lot of the mental status, spec depression, the Minnesota multiphasic personality testing, the Rorschach, all of those kind of things, probably others now. And then a lot of times your psychiatrist, they do a mental status evaluation. And so the master's level person never really got a lot of that. And the church, they don't know anything about it. So I got thrown into it and had to study and read books about people in psychiatric hospitals and how they were dealt with. And I had to learn that people got issues, okay? And you need to learn how to speak to them in meetings, be able to look to see if their eyes are even looking. But here on the radio or on, like, say, YouTube, you know, even in a webinar or a seminar, I'm looking at, you know, the people talking. I'm listening to their voice. I'm looking at their whatever they have and seeing, you know, what the topic is, you know, because you can educate people who are therapists. But did you know one out of every four therapists have been abused? Okay, they've all come from a childhood with adverse effects. And just a mess. So hopefully, you know, you will learn that sometimes just when you talk to people, maybe in Walmart, and you're just in, you just say in a nice to the greeter, bless you. It's so nice to see you here. I just enjoy seeing you. And just that one thing, that one kind word and kind recognition, you don't know what they're going through, does something. So I'll be quiet again.
Thank you, Pastor Deborah, and I'll go to Penelope again. Would you like to comment, Penelope?
Oh, thank you, Annie. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful. Well, as I mentioned before, I mean, I think that it's very interesting to know that when we're seeking help, and we find a therapist, and we think it's a good fit, you know, we have to remember that therapists are human, too. And a lot of times they have had their own experiences. Mm-hmm. And I think there are times that, especially if you've been seeing a therapist for a while, that you have to remember that. And if things are not your feeling of a deep, you know, we do, I feel as survivors have an uncanny, at least I have an uncanny sense of I am highly intuitive. And there are times when I wonder, is this their issue or mine? So I think part of the recovery process, too, is trusting yourself. And even those in helping professions are human. And, you know, learning to trust yourself and to trust that intuition and to advocate for yourself, because a lot of times, you know, we either felt that we didn't have permission to advocate for ourselves or we didn't we weren't in a place where we could advocate for ourselves. So I think, you know, that recovery, that's part of the journey, is knowing it's not perfect.
One of the things I think they came up with in hospitals and in therapy, a patient's bill of rights. Okay? So if you are a potential client of a therapist, you should, they're all got to be state licensed. And some of them say, well, I deal with adults, you know. Okay, well, what's your training? You know, most of them, it's depression, you know, marital problems. And but if you don't know that you've been abused, okay, like I was just saying, everybody's been abused. Because you could be abused just by being rejected. If you were the firstborn and then a child come along, hey, mama has to take care of the second child, you've now been neglected and abused. And some things travel the family. And sometimes you get abused by a neighbor. Okay? And you don't tell anybody. Or your first date. And there's a lot of strange family traditions and cultures. you know, and all kinds of things. And our nation is highly sexualized in many different ways. And it was still going on before rock and roll and Elvis and, you know, humanity is a sexual being. And men have been looking at women and kids. You study history. Rape has been used in war. Children have been sold into slavery. Even the Roman emperors, you know, they had little kids they raped. And, you know, all kinds of stuff. It's not anything new. It's not anything unusual for human nature. And so in mental health, though, the counselors learn that 1 out of 4 got mental health issues, had issues. Even if you grew up in a nice family, maybe had lots of kids, went to church, things happen in those families. There's a great story about, have you heard of the Duggars? I think it was a couple that had 12 or 20 kids or something like that. And the oldest boy was a pedophile. He's in prison now. Okay. And they were homeschooled, good Christian people. Happens in, so it doesn't matter what culture you're in, what religion you're in. Sex is a part of human nature. And once you get into studying it from a spiritual context, this is where they have tried to figure out how to stop men from abusing people sexually. Do they chemically castrate them? Do they lock them up in a jail cell? Just take them out of society? Do they give them that, you know, what is a sexual pedophile and they wear an ankle bracelet? They've been trying to figure this mess out. But once you study it from a spiritual standpoint, in our soul, there's something called lust of the eyes, lust of the flesh, the pride of life. And how you'll spot it is our, let's say if your body, here's the lust of the eyes. I look at something and I want it. It looks pretty. It looks soft. I want pleasure. And for men, sex was a way of also exerting their male strength, their prowess, their authority to dominate. They get pleasure. They don't care. I mean, they got some cultures that, well, they just do it with the sheep. You know, they don't care. And now we know, hey, men with men, women with it has been there since day one. Every generation sort of has to deal with it. It is in religion. Okay, we have discovered, I think it was the FDLS, the Mormons that were in Texas who were having 10 and 11-year-old, 12-year-old spiritual brides, little girls, the older men, were married. They'd have one woman who they married legally. Then they had all these little spiritual brides. And they'd marry them as soon as they wanted an innocent child. It goes on in religion. It goes on, hey, we've seen them in harems. It's nothing new. And every culture now in Islam, they try to, by covering up the female, you know, even her face, they're trying to stop the male from having a free-for-all party with him and getting sexually excited by even seeing their eyes. But that doesn't stop anything. And then you have the concept of what they're taught, you know, what a woman's for or a child is for. They're my pleasure, my property. I can do whatever I want to with them, and nobody's going to tell me I gave them life. So you have a lot of issues that the perpetrators, and I had to learn how to love them as much as the one who's being abused. I had to give them hope. You're a mess. What you did is a crime. You may need to go to jail, you know, but we're going to love on you and we're going to help you because you need healing too. So I had to walk this walk to love the bad guys or bad women, and there's a lot of them as well. And from my voice and how I talked, how I presented whatever I said, had to even reach them. Because we don't want people to keep doing this. And so, you know, we want, you know, this to be stopped. But how do you teach men to control lust? It's a fire that burns. It's an itch that has to be scratched. How do you stop it in a family? Is there generational things going on? Is this just what they do? Why would they do that to a child? What is their brain thinking? What are they thinking? Do they even see you as a child? Or are you something to be destroyed and, you know, be perverted and soiled? And, or are you something as a child to be dominated? Or are they so desperate, you know, to scratch that itch sort of? And what happens during that time, and then when you study, adrenaline is going. Dopamine is going. Their mind, their images, they're lusting. And it's just, you can't stop them. Okay? A lot of times, warfare, when a soldier is fighting, he's in that same mode. And that's why, you know, when you get people in fights, you can't, the adrenaline, the hormones, it is so chemically charged up in the body, and the mind is so set on what it wants, you're going to have to shoot it to kill it before it will stop. Why do they pick on little children? Children are innocent, they're sweet, they're loving. You know, and can't fight back. So there's other things going on inside the head of the perpetrator. Where'd it come from? Was he taught or she taught that? Because there are women who abuse their little boys. Were they taught that by their parents, their grandparents? Did society teach them that? Did movies, music? I had to study hard. So I'll be quiet again while you guys... You want to ask me something?
Okay, thanks, Pastor Deborah. You know, I was thinking about what you said about advocates needing to learn to speak better so that they don't trigger their audience but give helpful information.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that there's a... an organization that doesn't cost anything, I don't think. It's called Toastmasters. And the whole idea is that you practice speaking. Yeah, and that's a good place where people who want to be advocates can start.
They might. It is a very rigid place. I think I went at 6:30 in the morning for 1 hour. They time you. They give you a topic. You're evaluated. You know, that you're timed, you're critiqued. If you're not tough and can't take criticism, I tried it for a few weeks. It didn't fit with me. And yeah. My dad was a teacher. He worked with the Allied officers at Maxwell Air Force Base. These Allied officers would come in, and his job was to teach them how to be better teachers and how to explain things. And there is we've all had good teachers that we just learn from. We love, they're kind, and they make learning fun, and they give you a chance. And then we've had some horrible teachers. And sometimes the person's voice. You don't want anything from them. They're rough, they're mean, the way they dress, the way they talk. Yeah, you don't. It's like, they're trying to, you know, stand out as a therapist, and because they want something from you. Therapists, a lot of them are very needy people. They need to help you so they feel good, and they make money at it. And I've seen some of their dress. Oh, my gosh. And I had to learn to be a mama. I had to learn how to be a mama to a little baby and talk to them sweetly and teach, you know, honey, you can do it. Let's help you walk, you know. And you're trying to help them learn how to use the toilet and pull their pants up and when they make a mistake and, you know. But you read to them and you encourage them. And it's the same way with an adult. And sometimes they need to be little kids. And sometimes they just need, what you learn in the Bible is it says the very anchor of the soul is love. And what's happened when a child has been abused, they just flapping in the breeze. They're not anchored anymore. Love, whatever is supposed to hold them, so it's been broken. Either mama didn't protect them, or the, you know, if this person that was supposed to protect them didn't. So I always had to start back with, yes, you are worthy of love. I started with love. And then I had to learn how to talk. And even when you're an advocate, it's like I can remember the first time I went to a pastor's dinner, I think. And she invited me up to the front table. And what you learn in the Bible is don't try to be an advocate until you're invited. He says, don't take the front seat. You stay in the back till you're invited to come up. A lot of training. So she invited me to come up to the front table and give the blessing over the food. I had never done it. But I knew enough because I had taken speech, public speaking in college. And it's scary to get up in front of people and talk. And then when you have to get up in front of people and pray, okay, it takes practice. And a lot of advocates don't have that. They don't have a mentor that can say, okay, what we used to have to do in pastor is write a sermon, send it in, have your transitions. And I didn't do very well that way because I was just sort of a natural talker. But you have to have 3 points. You have to have, you know, maybe 45 minutes. You have to come to conclusions. You got to have some little jokes in there because you have to understand how people think. They can't take too much of heavy-duty stuff for a long time. Tell a little joke. Come back, go slow, tell another little joke. Because people in their brain, intense knowledge, they can only listen to it for a little while. Then you need to take a little break, you know, get up and go to the bathroom, so to speak. That was heavy-duty stuff. Okay, you come back, and now you've had a little break in your brain, and you can get a little more heavy-duty stuff. And then I had to get up in front of my pastor and give a sermon while he's judging me. But this was all when I was first learning. And then when I was learning how to be a chaplain in a hospital, they'll follow you around every room, watch you pray, how you pray, and talk to people before they release you to spend the night in the hospital as a chaplain overnight and deal in the emergency room, life and death. You got followed. You got mentored. They watch what you pray, what you talk. There's somebody standing there. I've had that. And a lot of advocates don't get that. And they don't get that mentor along the line that says, look, you've been assigned to me, and I'm going to be with you. This is the mentoring program to be an advocate, how to tell your story within 10 minutes because you only got 20 minutes keynote speaking. how to give a keynote speech, tell some part of your story, but give these people hope. Because everybody needs hope. And if you don't have that, then you kind of just, the advocates have powerful stories to tell. But they can go on and on and on, and you don't get anywhere. So it's everybody needs to be mentored. They need training. They need education. They need practice. Like, you could set up, okay, you're going to tell your story on Zoom. You got 20 minutes, and I'm going to look for certain content in it. You know, a lot of us used to do this. You know, we'd read a book. We'd have to write a book report. Do you remember those?
Mm-hmm.
And we had to come to conclusions, and we had to put in 3 points and stuff, okay? And advocates, if you want to be believed, if you want to go and talk in front of Congress, if you want to be let people listen to you, that you've got something that works, that you're intelligent. Yeah, you've been through it, but you are not only can you help change governmental policy, but state laws. You can help change the therapy world. You can help change support groups. You can help change and give hope to people. Okay, and so advocacy is very important. And it's learning how to do it and how to speak, how to dress, how to make videos, how to do Zoom, whatever they call them, webinars or something. How to, sometimes you got 5 minutes to speak. Okay, that's it. What you going to do with 5 minutes? And advocacy is not laughing and giggling and just telling all about your story. You've got to have knowledge. You've got to have give people hope that, okay, something bad happened. Happened to 1 out of 4 of us, if not all of us. But there's hope. How do you get there? What's the road you travel on? Where do you begin? And when they leave and you're, say, here on Nest on Blog Talk, somebody can go, that makes sense. And that one thing she just said, I'm going to go. You know what I got on my website? I got some songs. One by Stevie Wonder.
Oh.
Called For Once in My Life. Now, his song is singing about, for once in my life I have a love. I'll never be alone again. And he's talking about human love, but God means it to be a spiritual love. I got the Village People singing the YMCA about, young man, you can turn your life around if you just put your pride in your back pocket and go right there to the YMCA. There are wonderful songs out there. Elvis Presley had that one. It's called I Got a Dream. He says there's too much clouds, rain. But if there's just a light, candle still burning in the dark. Okay? So there are songs that will give people hope and that will give them, you know, you guys might want to change your song here on blog. It's kind of depressing. It doesn't give anybody any hope. Say, hey, I'm still locked up, still controlled by and locked up by these memories, and I ain't getting out pretty much. Okay? And so you might want to change the song to one of that. I had memories that had me locked up, but I found hope and love, and I'm well on my way. Something like that, you know. So you have to use everything that will give people, because I think that's one of NASCA's, foundations or goals, is to provide hope. And you can be an advocate on LinkedIn. Never see you guys out there. I'm going to take this thing, make a video of it, and it's going on LinkedIn and Twitter.
Wow.
Okay. I don't see you guys putting any of your things out there I don't see them out there. You know, I check the YouTube channel. Aren't any new videos. Aren't any teaching. Aren't any prayer stuff, you know. So you've got to be active if you're going to be an advocate, not just on the radio station. And, you know, there's a lot of community events you can go to. I've done those. And they're okay if you like them. Got to have your little table, you know, and your handouts and stuff like that. And you can have community groups. But right now, social media is the outlet where people are getting help. Movies, webinars, kids in virtual schools, and all kinds of things. You can go around the world on social media. Yeah, I'll take this one tonight, and I'll download the thing. I'll make a video, put the NASCA thing, and I'll upload it to my YouTube channel. It'll go on Twitter, and it'll go on the website, and it will go on LinkedIn.
Wow.
And, okay? And so you have to be busy, you know. And some of the different nights, the topic might be too heavy to put out, might not be appropriate for many different reasons. But how you help people is you don't just let the blog radio and expect people, you know. I don't see any NASCA out on LinkedIn. I don't see any posts. I don't see anything about upcoming shows. I don't see any webinars. I don't see anything. Now, I don't know if you have a social media person that's doing it. You know, radio's great, but that's just one avenue, you know, that kind of thing. So being a voice of hope takes work. Being an advocate takes work. And learning how to tell your story in an appropriate way. I mean, I went to one of the support groups, I think when they first started, that Zoom one, and there was about 60-something people there. And that tells you a lot of people need help. And one lady was talking about her problem and everything. People were getting triggered and emotional. And then somebody broke in and changed the conversation in mid-sentence. That was the end of that. And then whoever the host was came on and said he was going to close out the meeting because he got triggered. And you can't have that. That doesn't help anybody. Just have 60-something people telling, and you have people interrupting. But that's what they do in group support. You know, there has to be rules. We have to wait till so-and-so finishes. Okay, but that didn't happen on that one. So if I was looking for help, I wouldn't go to that thing personally. But, you know, and because it doesn't, if you've been abused and you're not fully healed, you're going to get triggered. You've got nothing to offer anybody because you got no answers. You can't tell anybody about therapy. You can't tell anybody how to get healed from all the stuff because you're not there yet. And you're just listening and being re-traumatized over and over and over and over again. And what happens is we got a lot of people that need healing. And they need to, it's like if you had cancer, you got to go to the doctor and start your treatment. And it's not nice. I've never had cancer, but, you know, who wants to be sick and lose their hair if they don't want to die? So they'll go through all that. So they'll live. And a lot of these people, they just want to sit in their muck. And if they can get somebody to listen to them and steal your energy and your time and have no intentions of going into therapy or anything, then they're just there. Well, I'll be quiet because it's up 8:14 and you guys can sort of finish up this, whatever you want to do.
Thanks, Pastor Deborah. Yeah, we got about 15 minutes left in the show, and it's been a wonderful show.
I would like to say to the people listening that NASCA is always looking for volunteers. And if you have social media skills or if you're interested in doing guest relations, please give us a call and or an email at NASCA.org. That's NAASCA.org. And the guest call-in number is 646-595-2118. And you can call in still, even though there's only 15 minutes left. If you have any questions or comments, we welcome you. And let's see what else I wrote. When we were talking about hope, 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 I wrote down talk about it. That's the hope. And in my mind, the more we talk about it, which means being an advocate, among other things, mm-hmm. the more we talk about it, the more chance we have of getting people to quit it. You know, if we take yeah. away their secret and say, we know you're doing this to children, and make it a big topic of public conversation,
no,
then
won't
maybe
do
we
any
can
good.
Stop
nope.
it.
Mm. No, ma'am, you're dealing with lust of the eyes and the biology. I know it sounds good, but you aren't going to stop child abuse. Men and women are both guilty of it. You're not going to stop cruelty to animals. You're not going to stop it. So what I had to learn was, no, I had to come to the conclusion, okay, it's going to happen. Just the way it is. It's in culture, tradition, religion. It's a part of our biological makeup, part of our brain. It comes from childhood. It comes from it all. I had to know it was going to happen. And I had to be there to pick up the pieces from both the one who did the abusing and the one who was abused. That's where you have to sort of, you're fighting, trying to stop a waterfall, okay? If you study the history of child abuse, you're going to go back to the very early man, caveman, okay? It's not going anywhere. Now, can you change the legal system? That's always a big controversy. What do you do with a child pornographer? What do you do with the children who are being abused on the videos? You can't find them. How do you stop a man from having self-pleasure? Okay. He's all right to make himself feel good. He ain't hurting anybody but himself. But what is he doing? His eyes are looking. Even if you blinded somebody, he has thoughts of it. Okay, they've tried all sorts of things, lobotomies, chemical stuff, sexual, you know, castration, chemical trance. It doesn't stop the brain from wanting, lusting. But you can help them on both sides, the perpetrator and the one who's been abused. But you have to provide hope, teaching. You have to be able to teach to them. Why is this wrong? They might tell you. What if a man says, I don't remember doing it? Because they disassociated. They blanked out. What are you going to do? And the child doesn't remember it. Okay? So you have to, my job is to help both people. Okay? If you can stop the perpetrator, then he won't do it anymore. And they're trying, you know, putting him in jail, but then they let him out with, what, ankle bracelets or give him the sexual predator thing. You can still live in the neighborhood. We want you working, making money, raising your family. Okay? So that's not really going to happen. It's never going to stop. All you can do is sort of like, how do I explain it? A hospital, this is explained, is a receiving facility. They try to do some health education. classes, you know, healthy eating, and but they are there to receive you when you're sick. Then when you show up, that's when they kick in with all their knowledge to bring healing to you. And then say, look, to have a healthy heart and not have this again, we need to lose some weight, exercise, okay? But prior to that, they have health educators out there in the community trying to tell you, you know, about being healthy and stuff. But typically they were receiving when you get sick. I didn't try to stop it, okay? And, I mean, some of the prayers I prayed, I did. But my goal was to help everybody. That perpetrator who abuses a child deserves your love, deserves healing, deserves help just as much as the abused child, okay? And they all need help. So that's where I had to come from was, yeah, even him or her or whatever, they need help. You know, there's a lot of women that are pimps. They're the mothers of the brothels. They're participating in this stuff. They sell their kids into trafficking and into the sex trade. They're the madams of the prostitutes. They're just as guilty, you know, as the men. So all you can do is be there for all of them and say, this is not good. It's not right. You got some issues, and we need to get you healed so you won't do it again, and then get you out there speaking to help others. And a lot of these people, they travel in circles where you and I will never go, and they have groups of people they hang out with. And when they get changed, they go, what happened to you, man? You ain't the same person you used to be. No, I'm not. I ran into this group of people called NASCA. They gave me hope, got a mentor, got some teaching. They prayed for me, and something changed in me. What I used to do, and you guys all know what that was. Yeah, we know. I don't want to do it, and I don't do it anymore. And then he would say to his friends, there's hope for you. And then whatever he learned from, we'll say, NASCA, the hope he got, the information, he passes on to others in his world. And that's how, you know, it sort of works. And it's just one by one, one by one. And so hopefully NASCA, you know, can provide some training for some advocates. I think I wrote Carol Levine, is that her name? And
yes.
Said that you guys, okay, could come up with it. I have this for my Global Goodwill Ambassadors Foundation and one in England. You could come up with an advocacy training program. And you make YouTube videos, and each YouTube video is maybe 5 minutes long. And they have to answer questions, learn how to make a recording, send it to the teacher. They get evaluated, and when they pass all, say, 5 classes or whatever it is, they get a certificate. Okay? And they have been trained by, we'll say, older healed advocates. And you said, this is how you need to learn how to talk on the radio in the support group. If you're in the community, how you talk if, you know, somebody calls you late at night, and, you know, they get trained. And you don't just leave it to them. I don't know, like, when I was in college, they had a help crisis line. I took classes. I took training in how to be on the help crisis line. Do you guys do that with people?
I don't know.
Okay, because when they call the people late at night, it's help crisis time. Okay,
yeah.
And so they also need how to be public speakers out to the community. What you say, what you don't say. What information does NASCA want handed out? Does NASCA provide the tables, the tent, all the stuff that they can give to these people to go out and put up a NASCA tent? at all the community events. Okay, I don't know if they do or not. But you can have, I took a thing from the UN, a lady, she had like about 15 videos, maybe 2 to 5 minutes long, and you take it, and then you answer a couple of questions, you send them in to her, and when you get finished with all the videos, you get a certificate that you can put on your LinkedIn profile and on your website, and you can print it out, and you can, you're now a certified advocate of NASCA. And see, NASCA needs to be doing
it. It's a fabulous idea, and I'd be glad to work with you on developing it.
Oh, that's fine.
I don't want to do it, but I'll work with you.
Well, I'm just saying these are things that so NASCA can, you know, be an advocate training place, and so that every blog talk radio, when somebody comes on. Okay, I'm sure you got training, didn't you, when you were going to be the guest and the person behind the scenes?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Well, some guests know how to do that. They're professionals. They're out on the speaking circuit. They're doing seminars, conferences. They're making webinars, okay? But others don't. And you want to have the best speakers. You want the voice of NASCA to be identified with qualified people, okay, that can bring hope and healing to everything that NASCA does, whether it's a, you know, just a guest host, and if you want to make advocates who can go and say, speak to the United Nations or to judges or on behalf of children, you know, they need training. If not, you just kind of stay a peer-to-peer support group, and that's about it. Okay? And it's just peer-to-peer. And sometimes, you know, I've listened to some of them, they're just laughing and talking about their day, and it had nothing to do with child abuse, no healing. And I just quit listening. And it ain't going to help anybody out there, you know, and it brings nothing, no professionalism, no hope, no advocacy. You know, it's a bunch of people just, what they call it, fellowshipping and gossiping in church. Doesn't help anybody. So it is now 8:28. Got 2 minutes, and I will see you next month. And I'm going to take this as soon as you get it up and put it to go out on LinkedIn and Twitter and the website. So you be blessed, and I'll be back with
you
guys next month.
We'll see you again next time. Thank you so much. And do you have a last word for us, Pastor Deborah? A last helpful tip.
There is hope. And sometimes it'll come in your dreams, through a song, through a quiet moment looking at the sunset or sunrise. You are loved. You are worthy of the love. And don't you give up. You have been found out there in that darkness. And you have people that love you.
And I'd like to thank Penelope for being here tonight too. Thank you for running our backboard there. And thank you to everyone who listened tonight. Yes?
It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, sure. This has been SCAN Radio Show 2992, Stop Child Abuse Now. And we'll see you all tomorrow night, same station.
Good night.
Good night.
Night.